I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, Gerardo Del Real, here with my partner, friend, colleague, Mr. Nick Hodge, who, of course, is also an investor and the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle. This is a very, very special 327th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. We are going to talk Epstein. We're going to talk the Fed. We're going to talk about it for a while with my favorite follow, and I know it's one of Nick's favorite follows on X-Twitter, Mr. Rudy Havenstein. Rudy, absolute pleasure. Thank you for coming on. I can't say enough. I appreciate your time. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, listen, let me start by asking you this, and then we chatted briefly off air, but we didn't get into any of this. Did you watch South Park last night by chance?
No, I should have, but I know I haven't caught it lately. No.
Well, listen, Nick hadn't either, and I hadn't watched it for quite some time. And I was sitting up late, as I usually do, researching stuff, and it happened to come on, and I had a timer to record it, and it's 21 minutes of some of the funniest stuff that I've seen on Trump and Epstein and just where we are in America. Oh. So it's been such a week that I can't think of a better week. And just to give you some context on this podcast, it's a very sophisticated podcast that started over Nick and I having a beer and me asking him if he wanted to start a podcast. So that's the background here. Been at it for 5 or 6 years and can't thank you enough again for coming on.
Yeah, that's great. You know, South Park is like, I don't know why. I've only seen probably, say, 10 episodes in my life. But everyone I've ever watched, I've just been almost choking. You know, I remember I was laying in bed one night watching it years ago with they had the Paris Hilton episode. And I literally was almost choking to death. I was laughing so hard. So that show, it's great. And they skewer everybody, which I love. I try and be nonpartisan. And I think they are pretty much. And so, yeah, I will definitely look for that episode. Sounds great.
Love it. Love it. I actually think Trump might actually sue Trey Parker and Matt Stone. It was that good. So yeah. Listen, for those of you, for whatever reason, that may not be familiar with Rudy, if you go to his X account, the pinned tweet is, I have two main issues. The military-industrial complex Eisenhower warned us about in 61, and related to that, the big bank crime wave and associated kleptocracy. Plus all the politicians, institutions, think tanks, economics, media fanboys, etc., who support number one and two. I said it before, I say it again. Epstein is absolutely the place where we have to start with all the developments this week. It is, Nick and I were discussing 1984 and, you know, the double speak and how government speaks to us and how they used to at least try to hide it. And this week, literally, our elected officials shut down the government and went on vacation for the rest of the summer to avoid telling us who was raping kids.
Yeah.
And maybe, go ahead, Rudy, because man.
Well, it's stunning when they, you know, I never really expected them to release anything because I think it's sort of like, you know, mutual assured destruction, like us and the Soviets used to do. The people say, why didn't the Dems release this? Well, first of all, you're assuming that Joe Biden has these tapes or something. I mean, I think, you know, Acosta said it well, how many years ago now? Many years ago now, where he said he belongs to intelligence. Back in 08, I think he said that. Or no, he said it when he was being vetted by Trump. But I mean, it goes back to that 08, 07, 08 case in Florida. This case makes sense. Everything that has happened and has not happened in this case in the last, you know, since 2006 or 7 is explained by some sort of intelligence operation. I mean, and I think that's what I thought it was years ago. And I continue every day. I become more convinced of that. I mean, for these people, you know, like the Bondi and the Bongino and Patel and Trump to suddenly this week, past week or two, come out and go, oh, but hey, this whole thing's a hoax.
It is.
It's stunning. And, you know, both remember that Bongino and Patel were both interviewed a couple weeks ago and they looked like deer in the headlights and they came out. So there's nothing there. And then Trump, the other, when he at the press conference, well, he was being interviewed and or someone asked a question of Bondi and then he starts going off. Are you still talking about Epstein? You know, it's a hoax. It's a disgrace that you're even bringing this up. For him to do that, he looks scared there. Okay. And I, you know, I'm not saying Trump's done anything that would, you know, put him in,
sure, we don't know.
But I'm just saying, but well, what I'm saying, I said years ago, I said, I'm not saying all these people are child molesters. I am saying they're all sociopaths. They all knew what Epstein was doing. Cindy McCain came out and said it in 2020 and nobody, I mean, to me, that's almost like a smoking gun. If you haven't seen it, it's on, you know, you tweeted it out.
Yeah.
She's at a sex trafficking conference and she's asked about this, this web of wealthy, rich people that traffic, you know, young kids. And she goes, she goes, Jeff Epstein, for example, we all knew about him. I mean, I'm exact quoting her here.
Yeah.
We all knew about him. Everybody, we all knew what he was doing, but there was no one who would go after him. No legal apparatus that would go after him because they were afraid of him. Now, she goes, for some reason, they were afraid of him. I mean, she's like married to one of the most powerful people in the world. Yeah. I mean, she's a widow now, but John McCain.
Sure.
And she couldn't. She's saying she runs a foundation that supposedly tries to stop, you know, trafficking.
Correct.
And she said, we couldn't do anything because they were afraid of him. Why are they afraid of him? It's got to be something so huge that it goes beyond one guy doesn't want to go to jail. I think you're talking about maybe, as I was questioning the other day, and I don't know the answer, you know, maybe way too many congressmen and politicians would have to go to jail. Maybe we have to disband the CIA when we find out what really was been going on. You know, maybe our foreign policy might have to change, you know, drastically if we find out the truth of what's going on. So, you know, but they're terrified of the truth coming out on this. And that's just amazing.
Yeah. And I guess what terrifies me is if they're that terrified of the truth coming out and they're willing to just eat crow so publicly on this, it's got to be terrifying. It's got to be horrible, the stuff that's in there. And again, we're not partisan guys. Anybody that watches this podcast knows we don't really care too much about either side.
No.
And really, and we'll get to that. I want to get your thoughts on the two-party system and how sustainable you think that is and Elon and his new party and where that goes. But I've just never seen... I call him the Epstein Four, right? With Trump and his three musketeers that were supposed to, you know, let us all know who was on the list and some of what happened. Oh. And they danced around with folders in front of the White House. And then all of a sudden now people, his own fan base is being screamed and yelled at for asking the question that he ran on and campaigned on largely for a couple of years.
Yeah, they're idiots. Right? He called them idiots, I believe, or stupid people. Or, yeah, he called it a hoax. I mean, it's just stunning because, you know, I was never, you know, I don't like either party, but
same.
I've noticed a lot of the comments are from, you know, people who are like, hey, I've been a MAGA since day one. And they're like, but you lose me on this. And I mean, I think the guys in Washington forget that there's one thing that most people of all parties care about and still is their children. And I think that's why it's just so shocking. And I don't think that, you know, obviously the Democrat Party, when they were in charge, didn't do anything to push this forward.
Sure.
Neither have the Republicans. Mike, and you're right, Mike Johnson, about that vote to say, hey, I'm going to shut this down. So we can't have a vote. Now, I understand that the Democratic proposal to have a vote on it is pure politics.
Absolutely.
They never cared about this at all. And that's what I said the other day. I said, you know, normally the people who've been saying for the last 10 years, oh, this is nothing. There's nothing to it. It's a conspiracy. Mostly Democrats.
Yeah.
And now you've got, you know, I call them the Trump kiss-ass brigade, all the influencers and stuff. You know, all these influencers, the same people who are running around with the binders, you know, they're all defending him. But, you know, when you've lost Alex Jones, you know, you're kind of, you know, he's got all sorts of people that are questioning him now. And with good reason. I know way too much about this case. I mean, I started looking at it, like I was telling you, over a dozen years ago.
Right.
And because it was so weird what happened in Florida. I mean, it just made no sense. The guy cut a deal that no one on earth would ever get.
Yeah.
And then you think about the origin. So you've got a 19-year-old college dropout from Coney Island, middle-class parents, who Donald Barr, Bill Barr's dad, hired, who was formerly in the OSS, hires this college dropout who has no teaching credential and has never taught before to teach at the prestigious Dalton School in New York, okay?
Yeah.
And after a couple of years there, I guess he, you know, for whatever shady reasons, he had to leave for some reason. So I imagine he was probably a little close to some of the female students. And so what does he do? He goes to work for Ace Greenberg at Bear Stearns. You know, I mean, what? You know, he probably got an intro from one of the parents at the at the Dalton School. But next thing you know, he's a limited partner at Bear Stearns. And then after 5 years there, which I posted on today, he had to leave because of some sort of financial misgivings. But there's something everyone needs to know about this. It's not just a trafficking sort or a, you know, child molestation. That's a big piece of it, but that's not the whole thing. He was primarily a financial criminal who was big money laundering. If you look at the people, he hung out with very wealthy people, and he had no source of income other than apparently Les Wexner gave him his entire keys to his kingdom, the head of L Brands. And Wexner isn't discussed enough in the public, but it's an amazing story, and money laundering. And also he was into arms trafficking in the 80s with Khashoggi. I mean, there's Daryl Cooper, you mentioned, you know, he did a thing with Tucker Carlson the other day. It was generally pretty good. He made one comment that really ticked me off when he took a little swipe at Whitney Webb indirectly. Yeah, and Whitney Webb, Whitney Webb to me is the best investigative journalist out there right now. So she's my favorite on this. Nick Bryant is great. Julie K. Brown is great. Cooper, I don't view him as much as an investigator as a he's a good explainer. He's a good storyteller of the facts. So his thing with Carlson was overall was good. And if you're a newbie to the whole topic, you should watch that.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Well said, Nick.
Yeah. So I've got two things that bug me about this, but the first one is that don't we know sort of what happened? Like, are we getting hung up on the wrong details? Like, we've seen the pictures of, you know, former Israeli prime ministers coming and going from the Manhattan brownstone. We've seen the pictures of Ghislaine and Jeffrey at all these highfalutin social events and Clinton weddings and Trump weddings, et cetera. We've seen Bill and Melinda Gates get divorced. I mean, we know, everybody knows what's going on here. What is I don't even know what the question is. Like, why doesn't the public just say, fuck you? Like, we know what was going on and you guys are hiding it. What's troublesome for me is, like, we get entrenched in this two-party, partisan, tribalistic thing when, as you said, both parties are heavily, heavily implicated, man.
Right. Absolutely. And over the years, whenever I made a post about Trump and Epstein, I'd get someone say, what about Clinton? And then if I did posted something about Clinton, I'd get, what about Trump? And these people have to stop the DR. You know, a lot of people that don't follow me, they'll see one tweet and think, oh, this guy's a MAGA Republican. Or they'll look at another tweet and go, this guy's a socialist Democrat. Yeah, and they don't. I mean, you know, I can't help you if you see one thing out of context and you already decide you think you know everything you do about me. I've been super nonpartisan on this. I don't care what letters after your name on anything if you're corrupt. And I think, like you're saying, it's obvious to everyone that there's something stinks to high heaven here. But we don't have police power. You and I don't. We don't have subpoena power. I mean, I've been asking for it for years, but no one gives it to me. You know,
we don't have lobbyists, which I've been a proponent for, going to get our own lobbyist.
Think about this. What did they do from the start in January? But, you know, Bondi, it's on my desk. They're reviewing the files right now.
10,000 hours worth of tape of kids getting molested and raped is what they said.
Okay. He was arrested in 2019 in like June or July. Trump was president for another almost 2 years after he was after Epstein was arrested. Why didn't they review the? Are you telling me that nobody reviewed anything back then?
Yeah,
it's a dog and pony show. They keep it's total BS. You know, it's total BS. The binders were insulting. The hoax now is insulting. There's a great line from Inside Job, which was about the financial crisis in 2008. Why isn't there a more thorough investigation being undertaken was the question. And Nouriel Roubini says, because then you would find the culprits.
Mm.
And I think that there are, I mean, Epstein's, it was in the Wall Street Journal, another article I posted. Epstein's days were spent nonstop with some of the most powerful people in the world. He's meeting with Rothschilds. He's meeting with the CIA director. He's meeting with the richest, most powerful people in the world on a daily basis. And they're all quite aware of his background and what he does. You know, they all, as McCain said in 2020, we all knew what he was doing. Yeah. So if you're the CIA director meeting in 2019 or whenever it was with Epstein, you absolutely knew what he was. and you didn't care. And that's the thing with these people. They're sociopaths. They're amoral. They don't care. They're used to this kind of thing. And there's plenty of stories of people going and saying, oh my God, I went to Jeff's mansion and the girls were so young. Katie Couric, ask her about that. She was appalled. And of course,
Donald Trump himself said it. He's on camera saying,
oh, he said that. He said, hey, I love Jeff Epstein. He's a great guy. I hang out with him for 15 years. And, you know, he's like me. He likes the women, but he likes them on the younger side. What do you think that means, right?
Exactly.
You know exactly what that means. Everybody knew. Vicky Ward back in, God, in the 90s, I think, again, another article, I've posted all this stuff over the years. She says, she's interviewing a bunch of Epstein's friends. This is before just because he's a rich billionaire New York guy. And she goes, the striking thing to me was they all mentioned the girls, the adolescents. They all mentioned it. And it's like, but they didn't care. So these people, I'm sure most of the billionaires that hung out with Epstein were involved probably in financial crimes, money laundering. He was supposedly very good at that. There was some arms trafficking, which is a whole nother
layer
rat hole you could go down in with the Iran-Contra affairs and all that. But there's this, the people who would be indicted, I think, if I was in charge of the DOJ, are the most powerful, wealthiest people in the world. And that can't be allowed, apparently. And people see that. And I think everybody knows that. But to just have it so blatant, Trump went from completely kind of blowing it off and ignoring it like no big deal to saying it's a hoax and you're an idiot if you believe it. And I mean, why not just spit in all your followers' face? You know, I mean,
exactly what's happening.
Face?
Yeah, it's exactly what's happening.
That's, I feel bad for the true believers that really believed this guy was going to take down the swamp and all that. I mean, I think in 2017, I said a thing like, you know, Trump's not going to take down the swamp. He's got Bill Barr as his AG. Are you kidding me? There is no one. If anyone, look up Bill Barr. He's been attorney general twice now. He was attorney general 35 years ago. Okay. Yeah. The guy is Mr. Cover-Up General, as William Safire wrote in 1992. You cannot get more swampy than Bill Barr. And Trump is like, Bill Barr, where'd he come from? Gosh, you know, it's like someone airdropped Bill Barr into his administration without his knowledge. You know, he knew exactly what he was doing. Now, I know back in Trump 1.0, he was supposedly unprepared. And so all the swamp people, you know, got in his administration. But I got to tell you, he's got Howard Lutnick there standing next to him laughing as he says this whole thing is a hoax. Lutnick was Epstein's neighbor.
His next door neighbor. You can't make this stuff up, Rudy.
There's an article where this says the mansion's touched. Yeah, the thing is, you can't make this stuff up.
If you made it up, they wouldn't believe it. They would say this is so preposterous.
They're hoping that, Bannon said, I posted a video of Bannon months ago describing how Trump operates. He goes, we throw 5-6 things out there, you know, all sorts of outrageous crap. And then we focus on one while everyone is chasing after everything else. And I think he's hoping that just by going, this is all a hoax, you guys are idiots, that it'll die off in a week or two. But I don't think it will.
I tell you what, South Park didn't do him any favors last night. I know you haven't seen it, but you will.
No, I can't wait to watch it. I'll probably try and use a clip or two of it. But this is such an obvious, as I told you before we started taping, I think this is probably the biggest story since
Kennedy.
1963, biggest conspiracy. I mean, and COVID, I mentioned, would also probably be in there, but that's not my forte. But yeah, it's shocking. It's just shocking how they're just blatantly just spitting in our faces. And I think that just hurts trust. People already have very, very low trust in government and in Congress. And Congress doesn't seem to care what the look at the votes they have on some of these issues.
It's insane.
And they know, their constituents are 90% against what they're voting for, but it passes 90%. You know, this is very bipartisan. You got to get out of the D versus R. Quit asking what letters after this guy's name if he's accused of something. Just find out, is it true or not?
Yeah.
So, but nobody wants to find out if it's true.
Yeah, well, I think more and more people want to find out. I think nobody.
Well,
in
no
power
one,
wants
no
to
one
find
in power,
out.
no one with any power. Yeah. Like, obviously, Trump wants us to die. I imagine there's a great many Democrats that want this to die too, including, say, Bill Clinton.
Bill Gates.
There's a lot of private equity guys that want this to go away.
There's a great
clip of Donnie Deutsch, who used to be a partner with Epstein back in I don't know the exact date.
Everybody was a partner with Epstein, apparently,
But about a couple of weeks before Epstein was quote suicided, he Deutsch is on CNBC going, you know, or he's on some news show going, you know, there's a lot of very powerful men right now having sleepless nights over Epstein, what he's going to release and say. And then, of course, a couple of weeks later, he's dead. This was the most predicted prisoner death in history. I was making jokes about it a month before it happened. OK, you know, the scene in The Godfather Godfather 1, I think, where or maybe it was Godfather 2, where Al Pacino is at the hospital to visit Don Corleone, and there's nobody there. And he's like looking around. The security guys are gone. There's nobody. That I posted that video and said, this is Al Pacino visiting Jeff Epstein. And that was a couple weeks before he was murdered. So it's inexcusable. Ben Hunt's got a great quote. A non-corrupt country has one job when Jeff Epstein's, you know, awaiting trial, to keep him alive for trial. Mm-hmm. You do not let probably the most important witness we've had in our lifetime. I mean, it's like when they killed Oswald, you know? It's the same thing. They could not allow him to go to trial because they're terrified. Because
he was going to say what he was saying. I was a patsy. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
I think I did this and this, but I didn't do that.
Well, I don't think Epstein was a patsy, but I think absolutely. No. I do think Oswald was a patsy, but I think that Epstein absolutely knew too much. Now, would he have spilt the beans? You know, I don't know, but there was all sorts of stories that he was going to name names in return for a reduced sentence because he was facing a lot of years if they went after him for all his crimes.
Yeah.
Speaking of naming names, so I asked my wife for a female perspective what we were going to be talking today about and what her main question would be. And she says, where are the girls? Why aren't the girls talking? If there was so many girls, like, why hasn't there been leaks? And maybe there has been. Correct me if I'm wrong. And I understand there's non-disclosures and gag orders and all this sort of stuff. But if it was as widespread and pervasive as we think and likely know it is, then why haven't the victims here been leaking more?
There were 40 or 50 high school girl victims back in the Florida case. And they were completely ignored by the prosecutors. There is something called the Epstein Victims Compensation Fund, which is run by David Boies.
Yep.
And Nick Bryant, who I have great respect for on this case and other cases, has said that the guy running the fund, David Boies, is not a good person, in his opinion. What happens there, I just looked the other day, as of 4 years ago, they'd paid out over like 135 women, well over $100 million in payments. The women all have to sign non-disclosure agreements. Yeah. They can never go after anyone on this case if they take the money. I think that for a lot of them, Epstein targeted poor and women.
Young disenfranchised girls.
Young girls.
Absolutely.
Not even women. He targeted young girls. And people want to make it sound like, oh, they were like 17. No, he was doing young teens.
Yeah.
Yeah. 12, 13, and even younger in some allegations. So a lot of them are fear for their lives. I mean, if you're on Epstein's Island and you see Bill Clinton and Kevin Spacey and, all these other people hanging out, or you know that he hangs out with, you know, some of the most powerful people in the world, you know, and the former prime minister of Israel, you know, Ehud Barak, is a regular business partner of Epstein. And I think a lot of these girls were in fear of their lives. So, sure. By now, after 4 years since I read that the other day, maybe there's a lot more than 135 victims who've been compensated, but they have to shut up. Why?
Yeah.
If they were harmed by Epstein, you know, I mean, maybe I can see signing that, okay, once we get our compensation, we can't sue the Epstein Compensation Fund.
You
know, that's okay. That makes sense. But why can't they go to a prosecutor and say,
yeah,
this is what happened to me? But the fact is, a lot of people did go to prosecutors. I mean, I was looking at
especially in Florida. Yeah.
And they were ignored. Yeah. They were ignored. There's tons of on the record under oath testimony from many, many women. It's been available for years. And where are the prosecutors? Where are the cases? Where's the FBI? The FBI has known about Epstein for, you know, since the 90s. He was first reported to them. Did you know he was an FBI informant as well? Google it. So the government is complicit in this, and the media, frankly, the vast majority of them are complicit in it too.
Yep.
You know, CNBC used to have, look at Larry Summers, very, very close to Epstein for a number of years, and the whole Harvard connection, and Epstein's flying to Mongolia Summers is flying to Mongolia on Epstein's behalf. He's visiting the island. He's, hanging out with Jeff from, and he'd be on at CNBC and I'd say, hey, you know, Sarah, hey, Wolf, hey, whoever, Scott, ask him about Epstein. No one ever does, you know?
Yeah.
So the media is complicit. The government clearly is complicit. The DOJ is complicit. I don't have the power that the DOJ has. I wish I did.
Clearly. Do you have faith that, and God, I'm such a sucker for this, right? We've all fallen for it. Like, yeah, I remember there's a quote that you have, Rudy, where you said, we'll talk about the Fed in a second, but I remember you thinking that you had a little hope and faith that Obama was going to be one of the good guys. And then he became Wall Street's best friend that they ever had, right?
But he on fooled this me issue, too.
Yeah. In 2008, I was so angry at the Bush administration. I actually voted for
same.
Obama the first
me
time.
Same.
Because he gave, I thought he'd come in a clean house, and he was a complete fraud.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
I think a horrible president. And frankly, his administration, I think, led to Donald Trump being elected in 2016.
And I definitely want to touch on that. But the naive, sure. hopeful, optimistic me, Rudy, it just wonders, like, do you feel that with so many people outraged on both sides, on all sides, because it's kids, man, do you feel that that pressure maybe could coalesce into a better system eventually, and something that leads away from this two-party system that frankly has been the enabler of not just stuff like Epstein, but the wealth inequality, the Fed, which we'll talk about in a minute. It's really been everyone behind the scenes singing Kumbaya and pretending like they're at war in front of the public and laughing their asses off to the bank.
I hope so. I try not to. I mean, I'm a very happy, cheerful person in real world. I don't want to go become, I always say, I'm not a cynic. I'm a skeptic because I still have hope.
Yeah.
I always hedge that good things might happen. So let's hope and pray that good things happen. I'm not optimistic. You know, I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah.
The two-party system is just designed to just kill any threat to the two-party system. They love the system.
Oh, yeah.
There's a great, people need to read. One thing you want to read, besides Eisenhower's farewell speech, read Washington's farewell address, which I think was written by Madison and Jefferson or something, but it's outstanding. And he specifically, George Washington, warns against parties.
Yeah.
Warns against political parties. So we could learn a lot from him. He also warns against permanent alliances or permanent enemies among nations. So that's another thing the neocons could learn from. I'm hopeful, but you got to stop. How does Lindsey Graham keep getting elected?
Oh my God.
I mean, someone's pulling the lever for him.
Oh my God.
We can get into a fraud election and all that, but I don't want to do that. But I'm just saying somebody is voting for this piece of garbage. So you know what? Write in Ron Paul or write in whoever you like, write in your brother-in-law. Don't vote for these guys, D or R.
I remember Ross Perot trying to do it, and he had the money and he had the policy.
Well, and then people, but you say that, and then people go, oh, well, yeah, Ross Perot is how Clinton got elected. Well, you know what? So be it.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when Trump was running against Clinton, and I had people telling me, oh, you have to choose. And I go, I have chosen. I'm choosing neither.
Yeah.
I'm choosing neither. Now, I loathe Hillary. You know, and Trump, I'm not stupid, but I he's the candidate. Trump is never the same as President Trump. We've seen that twice now. It's a complete bait and switch.
Yeah, Nick called it.
And, frankly, I still, I'm giving Trump a hard time now because I think he deserves it. But I'm not sad Kamala lost, so. It's just you trade. I said during the election, it was like, Ebola versus rabies. Okay, well, I guess, I'll vote for. I'll vote for Ebola because that maybe I can survive Ebola. I don't know. So it's a Hobbesian choice that we Americans have had in most of our elections in my lifetime. I mean, I voted for Ron Paul probably more than any other person, over the years. And of course, even the conservative Republican primary voters don't want Ron Paul because Americans don't want libertarianism. They don't want personal
self-responsibility.
They don't want. They don't. So, are people going to, I think most people that are outraged now are going to forget about it in a month. I'm not, but other people will.
Yeah.
So, but I'm here to remind the powers that be for what it's worth.
I love that. No. And that's why you're on, and we absolutely love it. I got to ask you one more question before we talk about the Fed. Elon arguably handed this last election to Trump. Elon is the first one to tell us he's on the list, right?
Yeah.
And Elon happens to be the richest person on the planet and has the attention span when he decides to lock in. Do you put much merit in this party he wants to start and the fact that he says he's going to primary people that voted for this big, beautiful bill?
No, he deleted his tweet that where he said Trump's on the list. By the way, I saved it and I reposted it. But yeah, so no, I don't have any hope in Elon. I think Elon's another guy, you know, kind of like once in a while you think, oh, you know, maybe this guy is for real, and then you reminded like, no, he's not for real.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he worries me. And this is the kind of guy that Epstein was also really, that's a whole nother aspect of him. He was really tied into the science and the genetics and the eugenics and the Silicon Valley tech billionaires with their bizarre, you know, the transhumanist nonsense like Thiel and all these people around him. And, you know, Vance is super tight with Thiel, you know, so I don't think he's the salvation either. Epstein hung around with a lot of creepy scientists too that wanted to do creepy things. You know, he was really into eugenics.
Yeah.
And you know, breeding and just also, I mean, that's a whole aspect.
Yeah.
That's a whole, another rat hole. Yeah. Like I told you earlier, you could do 100 podcasts and not be able to cover everything that Epstein was into. It was amazing what this guy, and he funded everything. I mean, literally everything, you know, it's like, there's a great quote: if you're involved in bad things, become a philanthropist because people will forgive you. And that's so true in so many cases.
Yeah. And just so disappointing, right? You look at J.P. Morgan and the fines that they paid to settle all the money that they were funneling and all of that. And it's like, so everybody is like, Ghislaine is guilty of trafficking girls to no one. The victim compensation fund is guilty of paying, not guilty, but they've paid 135 women for things that never happened. And JP Morgan paid these insane fines to avoid any criminal liability for something that never happened. I mean, come on.
Well, listen, just to jump in for one second. I mean, that's, you know, that's what's going on with the two-party justice system for, you know, since 2008 and before, right? Where, you know, no one got prosecuted for that. No one got prosecuted for LIBOR. Wells Fargo didn't get prosecuted for creating, you know, all those fake accounts for people. That's the justice system that has evolved where you're just paying a portion of your ill-gotten proceeds and not admitting guilt to keep going, even when these police shoot someone, right? And then the city ends up paying $1 million or $3 million to the people's family, but the city's attorney says the shooting was justified and there's not going to be any charges. It's like, well, why are you paying them millions of dollars then? So I know we want to wrap up on the Epstein stuff, Rudy, but I do want to hear it from you. Like, what do you think was going on and for how long? Like, I want to hear, like, what do you think it was and how long do you think it was going on?
I think Epstein at Bear Stearns learned how to launder money. And I think that was probably his primary, he was a money man. He could hide money. He could move money.
Yeah.
He could make it very obscured to normal investigators, I think. And so I think that was his primary crime, and probably most of the people that were involved in shady activity with him were involved in financial crimes. And then he also was involved in arms trafficking, and he also had a personal predilection for young women.
Girls.
And he turned that, I think, into on the encouragement of his sponsors, because I think this was an intelligence operation and he was an asset of intelligence. I think he turned that into a blackmail operation. And of course, they could also blackmail him for the money laundering, I'm sure, too, if they wanted to. But the purpose of blackmail is not to punish somebody, it's to control them.
Manipulate, sure.
So, and as Nick Bryant points out, the Mossad can't go to a federal prosecutor and tell him to back off. I mean, maybe they could if they threatened his life. It's coming from the Attorney General or the President of the United States, and probably under the advisement of the CIA. So this was absolutely a CIA operation. There's no way that, even though Epstein primarily hung out with Mossad types like Ehud Barak, and Les Wexner was basically, people need to really investigate that.
Yeah.
But this was an intelligence operation that was probably shared between, you know, maybe the Brits were involved too, for all we know, with Prince Andrew and everything. Mm-hmm. But that's what it was. And that's why it's ongoing. And that's why, you know, I'm not even sure, you know, the FBI has everything. You know, the FBI, and when they raided his mansion, there was some sort of delay of a day or so, and a bunch of evidence went missing. You know, who took the evidence? You know, I made a joke that it belonged to intelligence. So that's probably who has all this stuff. And they're not interested in punishing any of these guys for doing anything. They're interested in calling them up and saying, hey, Your Honor, you have a case coming up next week and we'd like you to rule this way. Or, hey, Congressman, we want you to vote this way on. We want you to support this bill, or we want you to vote against this bill.
Yeah.
And I think that's as simple as it is. And then if the guy says, well, wait a minute, they go, well, hang on. Do you want us to release that? And then, no, don't do that. You know, so yeah, it's scary. I will say, to end this topic, Whitney Webb and Nick Bryant and Julie K. Brown are the three people I would highly recommend that you look into.
Somebody told me today, when I told them I was speaking with you, that Ghislaine's dad got their family dog from the same breeder as the Hitler got his dog from. You heard that one?
No, I haven't heard that one, but nothing would surprise me nowadays.
Not at all. All right. We have to talk the Fed, right? Look, you talk about the military-industrial complex, right? And we are in full alignment on that, Rudy. And the last guy that really even talked openly about not following suit got his head blown off in Dallas in front of everybody, right? And so here we are in 2025. We have $37, $38 trillion of on-the-books debt. We're adding to that. Nobody seems to care. Everything, I mean, they talk CPI and inflation, and they give us these caricature numbers that aren't real and aren't based on what, you know, the everyday Joe, Mary, Jesus, or Maria experiences when they go to the supermarket or pay for health insurance. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it's enabled by the Fed. And so I would love to just get to you specifically. What is your biggest specific like problem with the Fed? And I'd love to have an in-depth discussion on that, because I'm 15 minute rants about the Fed. I can't stand the institution. I think it's responsible for enabling some of, you know, the worst crimes in this country's history, and really making it hard for lower and middle class people that are willing to work hard and just want the opportunity to get ahead or even keep up. And so I'd love your thoughts on the Fed.
The Fed picks winners and losers. It's a private bank cartel that Congress created in 1913 and abdicated their constitutional responsibility for monetary policy. And people say, oh, well, would you have Congress, you know, be in charge of monetary policy? Wouldn't that be awful? And yes, it would be horrible. But what we have now is horrible.
Yeah.
If you look at a chart, which they actually publish, if you go to the Fred site, of the total wealth in this country held by the top 0.1%, not 1%, but 0.1%, and it's lower left to upper right. It looks like a chart of NVIDIA, okay?
Yeah.
So that's who's been winning under their ZIRP and QE policies. Now, we had ZIRP for over 10 years. It's insane. Everyone needs to Google Cantillon effect.
Sure.
Because what happens is literally...
It's the honey going out to the dish, yeah?
The rich get richer and the poor get poorer, and inflation is a tax. Bernanke himself said that. It's a very regressive tax. So that's the choice that they're going to make. They're going to screw the bottom 90% to save the top 10, and especially the top 0.01%.
Yep.
They owned, okay, what's a big problem in America today? Ridiculous house prices, right? Okay, so part of that was COVID, but house prices have been going up before, pre-COVID, pretty at a good clip.
Sure.
It was ZIRP. ZIRP drove so much of that, and again, you had the Obama administration. Suddenly, for the first time in history, we have major corporations, private equity, hedge funds buying single family houses. That didn't exist before 2008.
Nope.
Okay. And that was Geithner and Obama's responsibility. And that, so we suddenly have hundreds of thousands of houses that are taken off supply or more, single family houses.
Yeah.
That was never done before. Okay. Then we get into COVID. What does the Fed decide to do? In 2008, they owned no mortgage-backed securities, zero, 2008. Yep. They bought a bunch. They bought a couple trillion. Maybe a trillion change of around 08. And then they never really tapered that, you know, never really sold it back. And then they went nuts. They ended up close to owning during COVID at the peak, I think it was $2.7 or $2.9 trillion in mortgage-backed securities. And they still own like $2.3 trillion. Okay, that QE... there's a great guy named Nick Hilaris who I've posted on, who was involved in the housing back in know, 5 years ago. And he just says, you know, that was the biggest exacerbator of house price appreciation. They were buying mortgage-backed securities, in other words, suppressing the mortgage rates, when Case-Shiller was running 20% year over year. Okay. So they permanently screwed up the housing market, because if you look, they still own a couple trillion. They can't sell them because they're so underwater on them. And I think that was a crime. I think it was illegal but nobody cares because even if it was illegal, Congress would Congress is so hooked on the Fed's drugs that that they would approve it. So that was probably the most outrageous thing. The ZERP, the Cannon effect, the QE is insane, and they're going to do a lot more of it. It's coming because we got so much issuance, and you know, nobody wants to buy these bonds. And the thing is, everyone says, "Oh, rates are high." You know, rates are so high. No. Mortgage rates are historically below normal. If you go back 60 years, you know, since the 60s, I mean, many of us know people whose house, you know, had double digit interest rates on their houses. The fact is the rates aren't high. The prices are high. The prices need to come down. The entire country went insane the last 5 years with prices. I'm shocked. You know, I watch some of these house hunter shows and, you know, someone will be in Maryland or Tennessee or something in a house. You know, they're looking at $600,000-$800,000 houses. I'm like, what do people make? They don't make, you know, the difference between incomes and house prices has skyrocketed over the years, and that's largely been a result, I believe, of Fed and government policies. You know, look at all the COVID, you know, there's plenty of people whose mortgages are being paid by the taxpayers right now with FHA loans, right? That's a big scandal that's been coming out, and people are already writing others have been posting on that. So that's the Fed just basically screws the little guy with inflation, with asset price inflation. They don't count asset price inflation in their CPI. Their CPI itself is a joke. I think cleaning supplies has a higher weighting than my biggest expense, which is health insurance. Okay.
Yep.
There's substitution, the hedonics. So the car goes up 10 grand, right, in price. So you got to pay 10 grand more. But the guys at the BLS say, well, you know what? Hang on. They got these airbags and the brakes are a little better. So we estimate that actually you got $11,000 worth of value. So the price actually went down $1,000. So hedonic quality adjustments means that things that go up in price in the real world go down in price in the CPI. There was a period of 25 years from about the mid 90s when car prices, new and used, didn't go up at all. Now, obviously new car prices went up dramatically between 1995 and 2020.
Yeah.
But the cars were better, so they subtracted it out. And as I point out, you know, it doesn't matter if a car can do brain surgery if you can't afford it, right? So that's a very, once they threw hedonic quality adjustments in, it's meaningless.
Yeah.
And you can't really compare today's CPI to the ones from the 80s, you know, because it's apples and oranges. They've changed it so many times. And as Grant Williams points out, they always change it to lower, you know, to lower the number.
It never goes the other way.
Never. And then what's the incentive for the government? Well, Social Security is connected to CPI. So many things are connected. They want as low a number possible. The CPI is not intended to tell you how much your cost of living is going up. It's intended to keep government expenses low. So, you know, and now we're in the world of what? Financial repression. And so they're going to lie to us about CPI like they have for years. And, you know, your cost of living might be going up 10%. And they'll tell you, oh, no, we're 2.7. Look at right now, their 2% target, which they made up. Their mandate is stable prices.
Correct.
And we've now been 51, using their nonsense number, CPI number, we've been above 2% for 51 months in a row.
And that's what the make-believe numbers. Yeah, that's what the make-believe
numbers. That's using their make-believe numbers. Yeah. And I always try and be very subtle and understated, as you know. So I do use their numbers sometimes just to point out, even if you believe their nonsense, it's completely absurd. And, you know, for people that are well off, you know, Barry Sternlicht says, hey, doesn't matter what inflation is. It could be 2%, could be 4%. No big deal. Well, he's worth $4.5 billion.
Sure.
So of course he doesn't care.
And probably, you know, doubling that every 4 to 5 years with the market.
Absolutely.
Right?
Because he's one of the beneficiaries of Fed ZERP and bad policies. And, but you know, for a lot of people, for most of America, it's an existential threat. It's, do I eat or do I pay rent? You know, or do I fix my car? And, you know, for the people that I see on CNBC and for FinTwit, most of them, and they're, it means it's no big deal to them because they're the ones that are into stocks. They've got assets. They're doing well. They're the top 10% that own 93% of stocks.
Yeah, there's a reason the top 10% don't have an OnlyFans for the most part, right? It's the bottom 90 that need it.
It's so sad. We're devolving in many ways into like a, you know, Weimar Germany or Roman type morality in this country, and it's not good.
Yeah,
but
bread,
I will
bread
say
and circuses.
trying to be a skeptic instead of a cynic. There's a hell of a lot of, I see a hell of a lot of good people in this country, a hell of a lot of good young people. We don't generally Agreed. See them. They're not on the news. You yep. know, they don't make news when they're just nose to the grindstone doing their job. So there's a lot of good people out there that are half my age and are killing it, killing it, not in the sense just trying to make, you know, money, like so many people, but killing it in the sense that they're involved with their church, their family, their community. They're yep. doing important work and good work, hard work. And so hopefully these are the people that'll take over once the, you know, the 90-year-olds.
So you are a fourth turning guy.
Yeah. Well, I don't, I'm not a fan of that as much as some people, but yeah, something's got to change. So I'm hopeful that we get a new generation in that can do that. You know, I know there's a lot of people like to make fun of a lot of the younger generation because a lot of them are bums and stuff too, but you know, blame the parents, I'd say, but there's a lot of them that are really great, great young people too. That
yeah, I agree. 100%. We share that sentiment.
Well, yeah. That generational theory, I mean, is, you know, the millennials is really what is the quote unquote hero generation in those books that rises up. And, you know, they're delayed in some respects. Like, I'm the oldest millennial by definition of the book. I was born in 1983. Like, I'll be 42 years old this year, right? Like, I'm a millennial. And so there's 20 years of folks behind me, and there's 60 million of them or 65 million of them or something like that as well. Yeah. So I'm with you. And
I'm the youngest boomer. I'm the youngest of the boomers. Yeah,
63? You were born in 61 to 63?
Yeah.
I've read the book a couple of times.
Yeah. I'd have to look all that stuff up. I don't know. I don't know what Gen X is. I don't know how old they are. I don't really care. I mean, because there's people I don't like grouping people like that. That's just a general thing I'm uncomfortable with, because there's all sorts of types within any group.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, so anyway, there's good boomers, there's bad boomers, there's good millennials, there's bad. That's just the way I look at it.
Agreed.
So I've heard you talk a couple of times. I listened to some podcasts that you were on. I heard you talk about the community and being involved. And I've heard you talk about being asset owners and gold owners. And that's similar to the things that we preach. Like, we saw this writing on the wall. Gerardo and I have been partners since 2016. And we've been preaching, you know, you got to be the asset owners. This inflation's going to eat you alive, whether that's a home or that's gold or that's copper or whatever it is, right? Even Bitcoin to a certain extent, which I know you dabble in just a little bit. But, you know, we've been preaching this sort of that financial angle and also, you know, community angle. I founded a newsletter 12 years ago called The Outsider Club. And that's what it was about, supporting like-minded people like the three of us seemingly are here. And to that extent, you know, Gerardo and I try to do good by doing well. Like, you mentioned insurance, right? Like, I know for a fact that insurance premiums are up 8.5% because we pay 100% of them for all 10 of our employees, right? Like, because we know that that is a major cost and inflating cost, right? So to sit there and hear the Fed say it's 2% when I know for a fact the insurance premiums are up 8.5% year over year.
Auto insurance with no accidents, with no tickets, was up 41%.
Yeah. And the auto insurance as well. We've had podcasts about that. I've told Gerardo about shopping for home insurance. Yeah. But here's the thing. So earlier you talked about the 0.1%, and I've made this differentiation a lot too, because Gerardo and I are squarely in the top 10%, like for sure. Maybe even in the top five or higher, right? And yet, when I read about tax policy from certain cohorts in the government and how they frame people like you and I mean, I live in Washington State. There's a Democratic state senator who called me a financial villain. I'm a financial villain because I make over whatever I make, right? And here I am paying my employees' health insurance premiums, right? So who the fuck do you think you are when it's the 0.1% and those in Congress and the Wall Street economic and political establishment that are making all these rules and also breaking them and rubbing it in your face, as we talked about for the first fucking 30 minutes of this podcast?
Right. Yeah. I don't think anyone in Congress cares about you or me. We don't.
I agree 100%.
Do you donate enough? I don't. I mean, you know, we're not on their radar.
Yeah.
They, you know, yeah. So
I got to ask you, Rudy, as it relates to the Fed, and you know where we're at debt wise, and you know, we've seen Japan, right? If you study that for the last couple of decades, how far down they've been able to kick the ball, and avoid the inevitable. What do you think the end game is here? How long do you think we have it in us and I say we as like Americans and our dumbass elected officials, but how long do you think we have it in us to be able to forestall what to me seems like inevitable, right?
Yeah. That's, you know, it's funny. There's a book I have from like 1969 called The Death of the Dollar. Mm-hmm. You know, they can kick this can for exactly. a long time. And I know everyone lately is down on the U.S. Oh, it's going to blah, blah, blah. I tend to be in the camp that we're the healthiest horse in the glue factory. So I'm not real down on the U.S. I'm not panicking. You look at a chart of the dollar. Yeah, it's down, but we're basically middle of the range if you go back 10 or 20 years. I mean,
sure.
you know, the euro's having its day, but do I want to put my money in a place like, you know, a currency of Germany? No, you know, I don't. And yeah. I think they're committing, you know, as bad as, you know, things are in America, I look at Europe and just go, oh boy. You know, they're, you know, and then the UK too, which I guess, I don't know, since Brexit, are they part of Europe? I don't know, but they're going insane over there. And, you know, they've just decided just to commit suicide in my mind. So I am not a believer in, you know, let's invest in foreign markets. I really am not. And I'm probably going to miss out. But I mean, I posted 10 years ago, probably on when another time people were talking about emerging markets. And you know what? We're probably down 50% since then, if you were in emerging markets. It just hasn't worked. Someday it may. And it may be great for a trade. You know, a sure. lot of times stuff like I can't, I you could I wouldn't buy a bond with your money, but yeah. if you paid me. But I understand people that can make a trade, you know, and make some money. So I'm not talking about that kind of thing. I'm just saying that, you know, if you want to put money for 10 years at 4% in the U.S. Treasury, God bless you.
Yeah.
Because I don't think your purchasing power is going to stay with you. So, yeah, I don't know. Japan, you know, it's funny because look at their, you know, what's their 30-year at now? So it's up at 3%. There's been a few articles lately. I'm certainly not a Japan expert. There's, you know, that Japan might be hitting a tipping point where they're going to sacrifice, they're going to let the yields go up yep. To save the currency or something. So I don't know. I mean, if you look at the currency, you know, these currencies are all going to go back to their intrinsic value at some point in the future. But like yeah. I said, it's been 50 years since the Death of the Dollar book came out. And yeah. we're, you know, I still accept dollars, you know, and a lot of people like to bash and act like it's going to go away tomorrow. But it may, you know, maybe it's 50 years, 100 years, but eventually, sure. Maybe it's 6 months. I don't know, you know, because yeah. these things happen gradually and then suddenly,
all
right?
of a sudden. So. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I always say we're the cleanest dirty shirt in the laundry basket, right? And so, yeah. You know, is the dollar dirty and stained and everything? Sure. Look at the rest of the laundry basket. Bad.
Yeah, you know, I was listening and reading, you know, Bill Fleckenstein, like, God, you know, in the late 80s or 90s, you know, on Japan, and you know, I know he's been wondering for years too what the end game is, and who knows? And maybe we're approaching it now that rates have gone up from let's see, in 2020, the Japanese 30-year. Oh my God!
Oh yeah,
see,
look at that every chart.
every central bank on earth went insane. It didn't start with COVID; it started before COVID in mm-hmm. 2019. Remember, we had the repo thing, and they started mm-hmm. QE in September 2019. So this was all pre-COVID. Check this out. This is just amazing. Japanese 30-year bond yield in August of 2019 was 0.10%. Mm-hmm. So 0.10%, 0.1%.
Yep.
Now it's at 3.1%.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, yeah, that's got to be, and everyone's leveraged to the gills, right? Somebody has to be getting killed on that trade,
Absolutely.
Right? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I always have all sorts of questions like, you know, look at our rates went from, you know, 0 to 5%, which is actually normal.
Yeah.
But nobody blew up because of that, or you know, a couple oddball people did. But I just don't understand where all these, you know, is the Fed. And by the way, the Fed secretly bails out people all the time. So for all I know, all these people that blew
no
up
doubt.
Got bailed out. You know,
no doubt.
We'll never find out because it's the least transparent organization in the world. The Federal Reserve, well, the BIS, I guess, would be the least, but the Fed is the same way. They passed a law in 2020 where they don't even have to submit anything, minutes or records of any of their yeah. deliberations. You know, God knows what the Fed's doing. I mean, as Neil Kashkari said, there's no limit to the amount of currency they can print.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know? Nick and I were talking a couple of weeks ago. We were looking and, you know, they've changed the rules for collateral now. It's you could just own the same amount of bonds and have a lot less collateral. So that's one way to keep it afloat if all of a sudden you're marking everything to market, right? And it's not penciling
right.
well. And so, again, if they're going to keep moving the goalpost, I agree with you. They can kick the can down the road for quite some time. But I don't think it's a coincidence that gold has done as well as it has, or Bitcoin. And I'm definitely not a Bitcoin expert, but I think when you see the amount of central bank purchases in the gold space, it's telling a little bit, right?
Well, yeah. Well, think about this. I just realized this the other day. In September 2019, the monetary base, which you can look up on FRED, just type in monetary base and FRED, September 2019, 3.2 trillion, okay? By 2 years later, September of 21, 6.388 trillion. So it basically doubled in 2 years.
Yeah.
There's a guy who wrote a great paper about Grant and this monetary policy, Ulysses Grant. And he mentioned in there that they doubled the monetary base in like 5 years in the Civil War. We did it in 2 years with no Civil War.
Yeah.
We doubled it. And then I was just talking to someone today that everything's at least double of what it was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So except salaries and incomes.
Yeah.
So everything, you know, sandwich that was $6 is $12. You know, I mean, everything's doubled.
Yeah.
And yet inflation, they say, oh, you know, prices are 22% higher than they were in 20. You're like, come on.
Yeah.
Are you kidding
yeah.
me? You know, so I think people are tired of it. There's fatigue. I think everybody knows. Well, first of all, most people in the U.S., if you polled them, have zero idea what the CPI means.
Correct.
At all. None. Right? So maybe you get 5% that go, oh, yeah, that's like the inflation or that's consumer price index. You know, maybe you get 5%. Well, I bet you 99% of that 5% thinks that the CPI is like, okay, you take the price of this item from year one, and then you take the price of it a year later, and whatever the percentage difference is, that's the change in price. No, because again, going back to the hedonics, and they have seasonal adjustments, and they have substitution, and weightings is another thing a lot of people don't think of.
Yeah.
So it's complete nonsense. And I think people are tired of it.
Yeah.
You know, no, I go to a supermarket and tell someone that their cost of living is only going up 2.7% or whatever the current number, nonsense number is.
Listen, you've quoted Ben Hunt, I think, once or twice in this podcast. And then my favorite Ben Hunt quote is, burn it the fuck down.
Well, I think he backed off that a bit. You know,
Nick has not.
Well, the thing is, you know, I'm trying to warn against that. I've been saying all along that my persona as Rudy Havenstein was meant as a warning, not as encouragement. So please, people, just, you know, it's a cautionary tale. And so like when people talk
Rudy
about
Havenstein telling us to calm down is great. I love
We need revolution. We need guillotines. The problem is, here's the problem. If we have a revolution with guillotines, Ben Bernanke's going to be fine.
Yeah.
He's going to have armed guards in his little gated, you know, all these guys are going to be fine.
Yeah.
I guess Yellen too.
The wrong
neighbors,
people.
Right?
The wrong people are going to suffer.
Sure.
The wrong people are going to suffer.
Sure.
So that's the thing. I don't know how to get out of this. I'm not. I'm on blood thinners. I'm not going to be going out with a rake and a pitchfork. But I just do what I do and hope that.
Well, that's my last question for you. And I don't know if Gerardo has more. But what is it that you do? So I've heard you say you own gold. But how does Rudy approach insulating himself financially and otherwise from all the stuff we've talked about today?
Well, one thing a joke that is only one thing I know for certain besides death and taxes, and that's in, you know, a year or 5 years, the purchasing power of a dollar is going to be lower.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I'm absolutely 100% convinced of. You know, maybe substantially lower, might be a little bit lower. I don't know. So invest in things like you were mentioning that, you know, are real assets, whether it's stocks or whether it's gold or whether it's miners for me are a trade, you know, you're in and I'm in and out, you know, and I've done well on them, but I it's not a perma hold for me.
That's my sandbox, so that's, Rudy.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too. Yeah. You guys. Oh yeah. Resource stock digest. What do you guys do?
Yeah. You got it.
The other thing that's been an important lesson for me, because I tend to be a glass half full kind of person when it comes to markets, is always hedge that good things might happen.
Mm.
So some of my best investments were when everyone's panicking and the world's going to end and everyone's throwing up and wishes they didn't own stocks. I would buy a couple different stocks when everyone hated them. And then they'd go down the next day and I'd buy some more. And then they'd go down the next day, I'd buy some more. And yet over the years, that's ended up being really great. So don't be a perma bear. Don't be a perma bull. I think always having a little bit of cash as an optionality, you know, not that we could ever have a decline ever again, but you know, in case it does happen, it would be nice. And I'm a little surprised that gold hasn't corrected a little bit yet, but you know, what do I know? I'm fine on that. You know, I mean, I was into gold, you know, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, so, I'm happy that it's finally doing well, but I mean, you know, I could have bought Bitcoin all day long. I'd be a billionaire today, but I didn't. But I, you
that's
know,
how it goes.
So I go in a little, and I have a lot in common with sort of the Austrian fans who are, a lot of them are Bitcoin fans too. So we'll see how that works out. I'm a little concerned, you know, that it's been totally co-opted by the Larry Finks of the world, but you know, maybe that doesn't matter.
Well, they can co-opt higher for a long time. We've seen that with all sorts of assets, right? Financial assets.
Oh, what is it? Yeah, the market can be
irrational more than you can say solve it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's true.
No,
that's true.
Rudy.
And I'm not short. I haven't shorted since 2009. So
also, rich or poor, it's good to have cash, I once heard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sure. So you're not a forced seller. That's, you know, when's the best time to get a deal? When there's forced sellers, right? So you don't want to be a forced seller.
Yeah. This has been an absolute pleasure, Rudy. Nick, I don't know if you have anything else you want to get off your chest.
I mean, always, but that's an hour on the mark. I think we covered all the things. We even got into voting. He said he voted for Obama, which I did too in 2008.
Oh, I'm going to get hate mail on that.
Quickly
Look,
learned
my
lesson.
It was only one time, and I regret
didn't count.
It. No, not in 2012, though. I didn't do it in 2012.
No, not in 2012. No.
I know. See, I'm a moderate at heart. You know, I mean, half my positions are left wing and half are right wing. So that's why people have a hard time figuring out what, you know, I don't fit into your box, people's boxes.
Yeah. Yeah, we get occasional hate mail from both sides. It's really funny.
That means you're doing something right.
That's what I say. Yeah, well, yeah. Rudy, anything else you want to get off your chest before we let you go here?
No, I will just say I do have a Substack that I just made. It was paid for a while, but now I decided, you know what? I do this for fun anyway. So it's all free and worth every penny for free. It's rudy.substack.com.
We'll
put a link when we publish.
Rudy. Yeah, we'll definitely put a link up. It was worth it when you were charging folks, and for anybody, anyone that wants, you know, I won't say an unbiased opinion, but an informed, nonpartisan opinion. You would do yourself a service.
I try. I mean, there's something to tick off everybody, so that's good at some point. So
I love it, Rudy. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. We're gonna get to the premium portion of the podcast for 5-10 minutes and talk geek and stocks and a couple of little things. But this has been an absolute blast. And thank you again for making time. It means the world.
All right. Appreciate it, guys.
All right. Thanks.
Cheers, Rudy. Thank you.
I am Gerardo Del Real along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was a very, very, very fun and special edition of the 327th episode of Bizarro World, our weekly therapy session. Y'all be kind, be nice. If you have a sense of humor and you don't offend easily, go check out that new South Park episode. It's absolutely hilarious. And likely the premise of a lawsuit here soon. Take care, everybody. Be good to each other, man.
See ya.